Court is now in session.
Please be seated. This is Anna Lang versus Houston County, Georgia. Patrick Lael is here for Houston County. David Brown and Anna Baldwin are here for the appellees. And Mr. Lael, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. The district court's grant of summary judgment to plaintiff under Title VII should be reversed, and the injunction based on it should be vacated for three reasons. First, summary judgment was granted to the party with the burden of proof when facts construed most favorably to the non-movements are in dispute. Second, the district court extended Bostock beyond its holding, finding liability for a self-funded health insurance plan that covered Sergeant Lang's non-surgical care and had a surgical exclusion that existed well before her hire, all of which supports defendant's position that it was not facially discriminatory. And third, the district court misapplied agency and state Georgia state law in finding the county an agent of the sheriff's office under Title VII. With respect to the summary judgment issue, here the plaintiff bore the burden of proof under Title VII, and there are certain facts that are pretty key that are in dispute. In several places, the summary judgment order noted that the exclusions at issue preclude coverage for sex change surgery. However, in the Title VII part of the summary judgment order, the court stated that hormones for menopause are covered, but hormones for sex change are not. That is incorrect, or at least in dispute, according to the factual record, and that's key because it demonstrates the fact that those hormones were covered, according to Sergeant Lang's testimony. The fact that they were covered shows that transition care is treated like care for many other conditions, such as care for weight issues is generally covered, but care for lap band surgery is excluded. This is just generally how an insurance plan works.
Well, she's not claiming that the plan itself violates Title VII. It's the exclusion for sex change surgery. It's the exclusion. There's a difference, right?
Well, Your Honor, I think there is a difference in how the court treated the two claims based on the same facts. You've got an equal protection claim and a Title VII claim. They're all based on the existence or non-existence of health care coverage under the plan. But for the equal protection claim, the district court held that the exclusion is not facially discriminatory, that a showing of intent was not required, and that the line drawn by the health plan as a whole, looking at the health plan as a whole, was between individuals who did not want transgender surgery and those who do. That's how the court looked at the equal protection claim. In contrast, with Title VII, the court found that the exclusion is facially discriminatory, that evidence of intent was immaterial, and as you point out, the court there looked only at the exclusion and not at the coverage of the plan as a whole, even though the same line drawing...
That's all she's challenging is the exclusion.
Well, what she's challenging is the exclusion in the context of a health insurance plan. So part of what, Your Honor, we think the plaintiff and the district court misunderstood Bostock as creating a per se violation of Title VII for any disadvantage to a transgender employee, and Bostock simply didn't go that far. It's important to recognize what Bostock did decide and what it didn't decide. It was the product of a trilogy of termination cases that reached different results about the scope of Title VII. And so the scope of Title VII is what the Supreme Court decided in Bostock. The 11th Circuit had found that sexual orientation was not actionable under Title VII. The 2nd and 6th Circuits found that sexual orientation and transgender status respectively were covered. And so all the court did was look at whether transgender status and sexual orientation were covered within the concept of sex.
It's not clear that she is denied medically necessary surgery solely based on the fact that she's a transgender. That's clear, isn't it?
No, Your Honor. It's a procedure-based issue within the plan, just like the procedures for providing hearing aids or the procedure for lap band surgery are excluded. This is one of 68 exclusions. And so unlike Supreme Court precedent, including Manhart.
Well, we're just dealing with the one exclusion, just this one exclusion that excludes this surgery, and it's just for people who are transgender.
Your Honor, our position is that the Bostock case, and let me clarify this, I'll back up and say, the district court said the only reason for treating that Title VII case differently from the equal protection case is Bostock. But Bostock itself, you know, we briefed pretty heavily the distinction between the issues judge raised by Justice Alito in his dissenting opinion, and then Justice Gorsuch in the majority said, we're not dealing with any of that.
Yeah, we realize, I mean, I don't think anybody thinks that Bostock was a case about an exclusion in an insurance policy.
Sure.
Okay. Does this exclusion policy really discriminate against transgender people? Because the way I understand it is that it also doesn't pay for sex changes back to one's natal and biological sex. Am I right about that?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So if I got a sex change and then I wanted to go back, I couldn't do that either.
That's right.
It just doesn't pay for this kind of surgery.
That's correct. That's why it's a procedure-based exclusion. If there were an attempt to facially discriminate under this policy, it would exclude all care, and it would cover a reversal if somebody wanted to go back to their natal gender. But that's not what we have here, and that's, again, Bostock didn't mandate a finding of facial discrimination.
Can I ask you about how you understand Bostock, and just see if we're on the same page about how to understand Bostock? So the way I, at least currently, am understanding Bostock is it says, look, we've got to determine whether this discrimination was because of sex is the phrase. And so the question we have to ask is the employer doing something to someone that is a biological male that they would not do to a biological female? So in Bostock, the idea was, look, you know, you are firing a biological male who appears as a woman, dresses like a woman, you know, wants female pronouns, things of that nature. You would not do that to a biological female. And so that's the kind of discrimination that is prohibited by Title VII. Is that the right way to understand Bostock?
I think the way that Justice Gorsuch explained it was if you have a party and one of your best employees comes to the party with a wife, what if the star employee is female? If you would treat the female differently than you would treat the star employee who happens to be male and brings a wife, then that denotes discrimination.
Okay, so I think we agree about that. So can you explain why this does not fit that kind of analogy?
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, the reason it doesn't fit that analogy is that, again, whether you're a natal male or natal female, this is going to apply either way. Even if you hypothetically were not transgender and you wanted to have this particular surgery for purposes of sex change, it would be denied. Again, I think the critical thing to look at is the contract as a whole. Georgia law looks at health insurance plans as a contract. We look at contracts as a whole, and here the coverage overall for transgender issues, she had her endocrinologist covered, she had her hormones covered. This went on for a long period of time, both before and after she asked about surgery. All of that was covered, so
well,
this is not distinguished.
This isn't making sense to me. You said if she's not transgender and she's denied the surgery, why would you need the surgery if you're not transgender?
That was a hypothetical we raised in our brief, that if Sergeant Lang needed a mastectomy for cancer, there's nothing in the plan indicating that she wouldn't get that surgery. But if a person who is not transgender, a cisgender individual, for some reason asked for sex change surgery, it would be denied because it's a procedure-based surgery. They're not going to ask, well, are you transgender? Again, I'm not sure why anybody would do that. We just wanted to raise that hypothetical in terms of how the plan works as a procedure-based distinction and not a status-based distinction.
In your view, would it violate Title VII if an employer had a health plan that paid for mental health medications unless those medications pertain to treating postnatal depression?
I've not been encountered with that. I'm not sure if...
Well, it's a hypothetical.
Exactly. I don't see that. And it would exclude what? The postnatal?
Yes. In other words, pregnancy-related depression or pregnancy and delivery-related depression.
I would imagine at first blush that would probably violate...
Well, that would be covered under the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, right?
I was going to say, under the PDA, yeah. That would be kind of a uniquely covered issue.
So under Gilbert, the case that came out before the PDA was passed, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Supreme Court said that it is not discrimination because of sex if pregnancy-related issues are not covered under a plan.
Well, let's use menopause then instead. Menopause created depression. Would it violate Title VII to not pay for those medications if the plan otherwise paid for medications for depression?
My sense would be, at first blush, yes, that would be a problem. But again, that's not what we have here, because Sergeant Lang's hormones were covered, and they were hormones specifically for her transgender treatment. Okay. Seeing that my time is up, I'll reserve other argument for a rebuttal. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Lale, Mr. Brown.
Can I ask you a quick question before you start? In footnote one of your brief, you say that your client was going to have the surgery in October of 2023. Did that happen? Do you know if that happened?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Sergeant Lang has had her surgery.
In that case, well, do we need to have briefing on mootness or anything like that?
No, Your Honor. A jury awarded money.
And they're seeking to undo the jury verdict?
Yes, Your Honor. They're seeking to reverse summary judgment. And in addition, Sergeant Lang, as a surgical patient, as with any surgery, requires follow-up visits. And
gotcha. Thank you.
May it please the court, David Brown, for Sergeant Lang, who is here with us today. This is a simple case, and the district court's injunction should be upheld for two simple reasons. First, the Supreme Court has repeatedly held that an employer who offers unequal benefits because of sex violates Title VII. And second, the Supreme Court has held that Title VII's prohibition on sex discrimination includes discrimination against transgender people. So the present case is squarely at the intersection of those two lines of precedent, and it is completely decided by them.
I tend to agree with you on that. So on Gilbert, so can you, and I realize this was not raised sufficiently, I think, in the briefing, but Gilbert is this case from the Supreme Court, I'm sure you're aware of it, it's cited in the briefs, where the Supreme Court said that not providing benefits for pregnancy was not sex discrimination. It was not because of sex under Title VII. How is this not that? You know, obviously only women can get pregnant, but the Supreme Court said, even though only women can get pregnant, that doesn't mean you have to cover pregnancy. Here, only transgender people, let's assume, want this surgery. Doesn't it follow under Gilbert that's not because of sex too?
Gilbert is no longer good law under Title VII, Your Honor. So,
well, it was for pregnancy because it was repealed by the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, right?
Both the holding and reasoning of the Gilbert decision were repealed, and that's the decision in Newport News. And I think subsequent cases as well. So the Supreme Court in Newport News said we can no longer apply the reasoning of Gilbert in Title VII cases, and it has never done so since then. So here, the defendants have offered an employee a health plan that it's undisputed, covers medically necessary surgery, including the surgery that Sergeant Lang needs, which is a vaginoplasty. And then the defendant's exclusion policy takes that coverage away from her because she's transgender, and that's the Title VII violation.
I understood Newport News to just say the Pregnancy Discrimination Act changed it for pregnancy. Your understanding of Newport News, though, is that it changed, that the amended statute somehow undermined the because of sex understanding of Gilbert? Obviously, the holding in Gilbert has been repealed by the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, but the reasoning, though, the understanding of the cause of sex, I thought was still good law. If you don't have an answer on that, that's fine, but I just...
There's a passage in, let me grab Newport News. Thank you.
Oh, I see. I see what you mean. Yeah.
You find it says that both the holding and reasoning of the decision are overruled. This is page 676. We go beyond the, accordingly, we shall consider whether Congress, by enacting the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, not only overturned the specific holding in General Electric v. Gilbert Supra, but also rejected the test of discrimination employed by the court in that case. We believe it did.
Okay, thank you.
So the first point I want to make is that the exclusion here applies because of sex, and we know this because defendants have admitted this in their briefing. On page 15 of their reply brief, they state the exclusion, quote, necessarily requires that the particular participant's sex be taken into consideration. And similarly, in their briefing below, they said that the county's health plan differentiates on the basis of transgender individuals who want transition surgery. And that's exactly right. And under Title VII, that's enough to make it because of sex. So 50 years ago, the Supreme Court in Manhart ruled that under Title VII, there is but one simple test for because of sex. Which is, but for the employee's sex, would she have been treated differently? And that is reflected in the passages that I just read to you from the defendant's briefing. under Bostock and going, excuse me, all the way back to Manhart, a policy that cannot be applied without considering the employee's sex is based on sex. And an employer fails the simple test in Bostock when it penalizes a person identified as male at birth for traits or actions that it tolerates in an employee identified as female at birth. Or put another way, where the employer discriminates against persons with one sex identified at birth and another today. Or to use this court's wording in Glenn, an employer fails the simple test when it acts based on the sheer fact of the transition. And defendant's refusal to cover Sergeant Lang's medically necessary surgery is based on the sheer fact of her transition, and it fails Bostock's simple test.
How is that the case, though? So just respond, I guess, to the other side's point that this is a procedure that one can get or not get. It's not, I think what they're saying is, you know, we're not saying, well, you are a male presenting as a female or a female presenting as a male or whatever. We're just not covering this procedure either to change your natal sex or to return to your natal sex. What do you say about that?
They do cover the procedure, and I think it's important to note that there's no such thing as a sex change.
Wait, they do cover the procedure?
Correct, Your Honor.
Oh.
There's no such thing as a sex change in medicine. That's an antiquated non-medical term, and it's simply whatever the plan deems a procedure to be changing a sex. So they cover vaginoplasties, which is a procedure that it's, again, undisputed, is medically necessary for lots of different reasons and is covered by the plan, but then it takes away that coverage from Sergeant Lang specifically because she needs it for the necessity of what a plan deems a sex change. And so the plan says, were you assigned male?
Yeah, I just want to push back a little bit on that and get your response to this, because they say in their reply brief that this is a very different procedure than a vaginoplasty that a woman would get, right? And if you look at your, I believe it's your expert and maybe your treating physician, they say in their expert reports that this is a constellation of procedures, including a penectomy and orchiectomy and then a vaginoplasty. And the reason that you're doing those is to remove the penis, remove the testes, and then create what your expert says is a neo-vagina. What are those things that, I mean, it seems like those are unique procedures that they can, when they're saying we're not covering those, it's not something that they would otherwise cover. What do you say about that?
Well, what is it that makes them unique, Your Honor? It's sex, right? And that is the ground prohibited under Title VII. So all of these procedures are covered, right? You can get them for all kinds of reasons except for a sex change. And so when the defendants are saying, well, they're different, right? The only thing that they're citing to is, well, they're different because, let's say, one time it involves a penis and one time it does not. That is clearly sex. That is exactly the prohibited ground. And so I think that argument actually highlights why defendant's exclusion is impermissible under Title VII.
So you're saying that medically those are the same procedures, a vaginoplasty for a biological woman and a vaginoplasty for a natal male are the same procedure?
I'm saying that the only difference that the defendants have pointed to is sex, right? They are the same in all material respects, namely they are medically necessary surgery, which is what the plan covers. And so what is the only difference? What is the thing that makes it uncovered? It's sex, right? It's the presence of a penis. And so that is the reason that it violates Title VII, right? And Bostock makes that very clear. You change one thing, In this case, the presence of a penis, it's the but-for cause, and we withdraw the coverage that you would otherwise have. So that's what makes it sex-based policy.
There are other exclusions that it seems to me could not be rewritten without reference to sex, such as exclusions related to sexual disabilities. Would your argument doom those exclusions as well?
Well, I think you have to think about what Bostock means when it uses the word sex, and it's very clear on that, right? It doesn't mean sort of anything vaguely connected with sexuality. It has to do with sex itself. And so I guess I don't know enough about sort of how that exclusion is administered, but it has to be more than simply related in some way to sexuality to fall afoul of Title VII's prohibition. Sex has to be the but-for cause of why a benefit is withdrawn.
One argument that they make in their reply brief to that I'd like you to respond to is they say that what you're seeking is sort of a most favored nation status for gender dysphoria. So basically, you know, any coverage provided for anything else must be provided for gender dysphoria. What do you say about that?
Well, Title VII prohibits withdrawing coverage because of gender dysphoria, Your Honor. So if the plan, for example, didn't cover surgery, we wouldn't be here because Sergeant Lang's vaginoplasty was denied.
Yeah, I guess, and what they're saying is I think you agree, you are seeking that, but I just want to make sure. So, I mean, I think what they're saying is that if the plan covers, for example, if the plan covers mental health care for, you know, I don't know, for anorexia, then you would say that it has to cover mental health care for gender dysphoria. Is that correct?
It cannot withdraw coverage of mental health care because it is care for gender dysphoria, because that is a sex-based classification. So when Bostock says...
So maybe I'm just misunderstanding. So what is the... You're drawing a distinction there, and I'm just missing the distinction. What is... So if the health care plan is written and it says, normally we don't cover mental health care, we don't cover, you know, psychological visits, things like that, but we do for anorexia, let's say. Uh-huh. Is that a problem or not a problem?
Well, it would depend on whether, for example, is mental health care... I'd have to know a little bit more about things like, for example, does mental health care for gender dysphoria work, right? Is it excluded because it is ineffective, for example? And so if there's a generally applicable...
No, I mean, I just think they're just saying, you know, we as a general matter, this policy doesn't cover this, but, you know, we made it, you know, we want to cover it for this condition, but not for other conditions. And I think what they're saying is they're saying that your position would require plans like that. If you provide coverage for one condition, that you have to provide coverage for gender dysphoria. And I guess I don't know what your response is on that.
Well, it doesn't sound to me like that's the same case that we have here, which is...
I agree, it's not.
Perhaps the reason I'm hesitating. So if in your example, there's no withdrawal of coverage because of sex. So that sounds like it may not be the same problem we have here, right? They're not refusing to cover gender dysphoria explicitly because of sex.
So I guess, and the way I understand these plans work, and, you know, I barely understand them, but the way I understand that they work is that, you know, they provide, we're going to provide this coverage, we're going to provide this coverage, and they might have exclusions, they may have, like, special riders that say, like, we don't usually provide this, but now we're going to do in this plan. And I guess what I'm concerned with is writing a rule that says, help me with this. How do we write the decision in your favor that doesn't make, and maybe it should, maybe your position is that it does, but how would we write a decision in your favor that doesn't make gender dysphoria something that always gets, anything that you want to treat gender dysphoria is always covered as long as it's covered for any other condition?
Because it can still be excluded pursuant to non-sex-based exclusions, right? So if you have an exclusion for sort of generally applicable, we don't cover care that is ineffective, we don't cover surgery, and those kinds of things.
So you have to look at the reasons, I guess, that it's not covered?
Well, you have to look at whether the exclusion is based on sex or something else, just the same as it would be if you tried to insert an exclusion based on any other protected ground under Title VII.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Baldwin.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Anna Baldwin for the United States as amicus. An exclusion in an employer-sponsored health plan violates Title VII if it excludes coverage for medical treatments only when they're needed for transgender persons. So to go back to your question, Judge Brasher, Title VII doesn't create some sort of obligation, affirmative obligation to, you have to offer certain care as a freestanding obligation. What it creates is an obligation not to treat people differently in part because of sex. So could you have an exclusion that says, and here we're just talking about facial discrimination, and this is, we're just talking about under Title VII, does something facially discriminate? Are you going to be able to bring a facial discrimination claim that says we cover health care for, you know, anorexia? Is that facially discriminatory based on sex? No, it's like an affirmative, you know, coverage inclusion. But what you can't do is have an example, you know, my friend on the other side talks about this is a procedure-based, it's not, you know, because of sex. Well, sure, you can have an exclusion that says we don't cover lap band surgery. But you can't have an exclusion that says we don't cover lap band surgery for transgender people. And that is closer to what we have here. The facial exclusion that says no sex change surgeries. You know, yes, again, Judge Brasher, you don't have to agree that...
What about the issue that it doesn't cover the surgery back? What do you say about that as a difference between your lap band hypothetical and this hypothetical?
Sure. Again, you know, we're talking about Bostock talks about one form of causation, and a relevant form of causation is but-for causation. And so it doesn't have to be the only reason that if sex is in part. So at some point, the fact that you wanted to change your sex from your sex assigned at birth back, it's still, you know, talking about sex is in part the reason why it's not. There was some point in time where you identified not with your sex as assigned at birth, and you're going back in time. You know, it doesn't have to be the same as like a categorical exclusion based on transgender status per se to violate Title VII. You know, the Supreme Court in Bostock recognizes that sex, homosexuality, sexual orientation, transgender status, they're all different concepts, but the point is that you unavoidably discriminate based in part on sex when you discriminate against transgender people. And here, the point is that in this policy, it is unavoidable. It is literally written in terms of, you know, procedures for sex change. So could you have a different policy that might end up excluding, you know, these procedures that wouldn't be facially discriminatory? Yes, it might violate Title VII for some other reason.
What about, to go to Judge Pryor's point, that this policy says, I don't exactly remember the exact language, but it says something to the effect of, we don't cover, you know, sex-related, problems, let's just say problems. I'm sure it uses a better term than that, but it says something like that. What about that?
You know, under the sort of reasoning of Bostock, it's like, if you change sex, does something change? And if that's an across-the-board prohibition, you could have a policy. Now, again, this might raise sort of intent problems and questions if you said no genital surgery, right? That applies for no matter what the reason. But that's a very different policy than it's just facially discriminatory that says no sex changes, that it, based on your sex assigned at birth, if you're trying to have a surgery to identify with your gender identity, it's banned under the policy. And that is facial discrimination under the reasoning of Bostock. So it's, this case is squarely decided by Bostock's understanding of what sex discrimination is, what but-for causation is. And Judge Brasher, you don't have to, a fact finder wouldn't have to the court doesn't have to agree that these surgeries would be identical if it were performed for a cisgender woman or in a transgender woman. The physiological sex is different. It is one difference. But the point is, it only has to be one difference for the but-for causation. And is that physiological difference the reason why it's not covered? Yes. Under the facial terms of this policy, that is the reason. So again, you know, it's not, Title VII isn't going to say it's not most favored nation status that the holding of Bostock means that all transition care must automatically be covered. The holding of Bostock is transgender people are not strangers to Title VII, and you can't withdraw benefits that are generally applicable to other people simply based on their transgender status. And for that reason, we'd ask this court to affirm.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Lale, you've reserved some time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address two of the cases that came up in my colleague's presentation, and those two cases are Newport News and Manhart. In Newport News, essentially, male employees got one plan and female employees got another. There was that level of difference in terms of the coverage of those plans. We don't have that here. We have one plan that Sergeant Lang got, just like every other sheriff's office employee and county employee, and in that plan are 68 medical exclusions and 29 pharmacy exclusions. One of those exclusions happens to impact her more than it affects other members of the plan, but other members of the plan are affected by some of those other exclusions that don't impact her. That's insurance. And we believe the district court was in error in not construing the plan as a whole in looking at the Title VII claim. The second case is the Manhart case, where it required a greater retirement plan contribution from women because as a group, they live longer in a retirement plan, and so they were required to contribute more money into a retirement plan to get the same benefit later. And the court said, no, we don't analyze based on groups, we analyze based on individuals. The Manhart case, interestingly, distinguished the Geduldig case and said that in Geduldig, there was a line drawn between pregnant persons and non-pregnant persons, and there are women on both sides. So we find in Geduldig no equal protection issue. And in the Manhart case, the Supreme Court said, here, the line is drawn between female and male employees. Male employees get less coverage for their spouses, and therefore that's a pure sex-based distinction. So Geduldig doesn't, you know, provide a way out for the Los Angeles Water Plan. That was a problem. Here, the line is drawn between those who do want transgender surgery and those who do not. And they're transgender individuals on both sides. So we believe that the going further back in precedent, those cases actually support the county's position here and do not support the idea that there should be facial discrimination in found in this case. It's also important that the Bostock court...
So if I understand your argument, then there are transgender employees who don't want the surgery, and so the policy cannot be discriminatory because they don't want the surgery?
Your Honor, that's... I don't know that they're necessarily employees that fit that characteristic, but within some of the expert reporting and other testimony, it's been espoused that not all transgender individuals desire to have the full sex change surgery. And so the argument that we're making is, if that's the case, and that's what's been posited to us by a plaintiff, then you've got transgender people on each side of this line, and the line is drawn at whether you want surgery or not, not whether you're transgender or not. And that's an important distinction because that's consistent with Geduldig. It plays in.
Yeah, so what do you say? I mean, I think that is consistent with the pregnancy issue that was dealt with, where, you know, you have some women are pregnant, some women are not. So is, prohibiting coverage for pregnancy violative of Title VII? The Supreme Court said no. But they pointed out that when the Supreme Court recognized that the Pregnancy Discrimination Act overruled that case, that they went farther than that and rejected the reasoning that you're suggesting we follow. What do you say about that?
Well, I think you're talking about two different cases. That
Well, Geduldig is an equal protection case. Yeah, Gilbert is the one that's Title VII,
right.
And this is Title VII.
Right. Mm-hmm. But again, I think the issue here is that the district court went all the way to finding facial discrimination in favor of the party with the burden of proof. It went as far as to find facial discrimination without taking into account the very same issues that it did take into account in the equal protection analysis. And our position, Your Honor, is that that does not amount to facial discrimination, and we should have an opportunity to present this to a jury and let them determine if there was intent to discriminate.
Can I ask you a quick question before you sit down about the mootness issue I raised with opposing counsel? I guess I'm confused about what you're asking for in this case. I thought you were just asking for an injunction to be lifted. Are you seeking to undo the summary judgment and litigate on the underlying, like, I think it was $60,000 or something?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
The underlying summary judgment determination was the foundation for entry of the permanent injunction. And so we're attacking the injunction and saying the injunction should be dissolved. But to do that, we have to show that the summary judgment was improperly granted.
Are you seeking, though, I think there were, am I right, it was like $60,000 of damages, or there was some amount of damages?
Right, $60,000.
Seeking to undo the damages award?
That's right.
You are? Okay.
Yes. So that we would have an opportunity to try the equal protection claim and the Title VII claim as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Court is in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
All rise.